don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Welcome to Education Nation, where every Saturday morning at 10:30, we grab our second cup of coffee and tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Pete Hegseth. School is now in session.
Well, welcome to KLB, or to all of our KLBB listeners this morning. And this is Rebecca Hagstrom, your host of Education Nation, here with my co-host, Pete Hegseth.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Excited to be here always.
Last week when we got started, you told me that you had put some Baileys in your coffee.
Yeah.
And you got a little silly and crazy last week.
I did. I got a little crazy last week. I really reined it in this week.
Okay. I'm glad
decided,
to know that. So we're going to have a little bit more serious conversation.
Sober radio is better radio.
I don't think you were quite that bad.
No, I wasn't. But we like to have a little fun.
We do like to have fun. But this is actually a little bit more of a sobering topic
that we're talking about today, isn't it? It is.
No, you
found this article. In fact, I think our guest who we're going to have on the bulk of our show, we're bringing on the history teacher from Liberty Classical Academy. Amazing guy. So you're going to want to stick around to hear that. But he brought to our attention an article in MarketWatch.com, based on a survey that was done. Of what youth today understand about history.
Right.
And it's amazing. What's so powerful about the article is how things have changed.
My goodness,
and
yes.
What limited knowledge so many youth today have of really significant historical trends and really significant historical figures. I mean, this stuff is mind-blowing.
Right. It is mind-blowing, Pete. And I think that the statistic, while there were several and we'll talk about each of them, the statistic that was most mind-blowing to me, and I think to you too, was the fact that 32% of millennials actually thought that George W. Bush was more responsible or was responsible for more deaths than Stalin.
Than Joseph Stalin, the communist dictator du jour.
Exactly.
Responsible for... But when you have a range of between 56 and 62 million unnatural deaths, these are not people that died, you know, because they were old.
Yes.
We're going to round it by 6 million. Yeah. We're not quite sure how many, but it was definitely in that range.
Uh-huh.
Millennials say, nope, George W. Bush.
Yeah. Which shows their utter... lack of knowledge. I mean, they aren't even being given the information.
It's
clearly
brainwashing.
Because if they had learned anything about Stalin, they would know that there isn't even a comparison. And so clearly, it makes you wonder whether they've even heard one word about Stalin. Or if they have they actually learned something positive? Is it possible that Lenin and Stalin and Mao could be addressed in a positive light in today's schools, Pete? Do you think it's happening?
Of course. I mean, also, well, you look at the alliance that we had in World War II, they might say, well, Stalin was just there with Churchill.
Uh-huh.
He was just there with FDR.
Yeah.
I mean, right? I mean, I think that's maybe the only picture they have of Stalin is the three of them sitting together trying to carve out the war plan. I mean, but if you don't understand why we allied with them and then what happened afterwards and what Stalin did to consolidate power, you think, oh, he's fine, dude.
Mm-hmm.
And it was George W. Bush who manufactured weapons of mass destruction and sent our troops to Iraq. You know, don't you know how evil that was? He must be worse. I mean, that's what we're up against is just a total lack. It actually makes me sad when I read all these stats. I mean, for example, another one, 80% of baby boomers. So the older generation, they believe that communism was and is a problem. So 91% of elderly Americans, while just 55% of millennials say the same.
Right.
So half as many millennials believe that communism is a big problem.
Exactly.
And then you've got just 37% of millennials have a very unfavorable view of communism compared to 57% of Americans overall. Close to half of Americans aged 16 to 20, so young Americans, say they would vote for a socialist. Which we saw with Bernie Sanders.
Right, exactly.
Not only did they say they would, they did.
Yes.
And 21% would vote for a communist.
Right. That is just appalling.
Let's just end the show.
Remember the day when Joel the plumber actually brought out something negative about Obama, and that was that, you're basically a socialist, and he called him out? That was only, Well, that's, I guess, true. 8 years ago,
wasn't
right?
That long ago.
Right,
yeah.
It was not that long ago. And yet that was a huge negative issue for him.
Yeah.
So even within these last 8 years, we have come that far where people would actually say, no, I'd like to vote for a socialist, or I might actually like to vote for a communist.
The other stat on the flip side, when asked about their opinion of capitalism, 64% of Americans over the age of 65 said they viewed it favorably. Mm-hmm. Just 42% of millennials view capitalism favorably.
Yeah, that's less than half, Pete.
Capitalism.
Yes, and that is the very thing that made this nation what it is today, along with the solid values that we had in our country.
There's always a lot of
both
factors.
Both things under attack right now.
And that's what we're going to ask John when we come back from the break.
Right.
How do you teach that?
Yeah.
How do you teach the upside of capitalism without it being political? Because it's not. It's the system upon which our country has flourished,
right.
And we've given prosperity not just to Americans, but the entire globe.
Right. When you look at some of the other countries that used to be third world countries that have come a long way, like India, for instance, it has been through capitalism that they have been able to bring themselves up in the world.
Of course.
And this is what we see across the world. And yet, for some reason, the nations that were traditionally capitalistic are made to feel guilty and bad for the success that they've had, even though they have brought that to the rest of the world.
Well, it's because it's all exploitation of George W. Bush. You know, that's what they've been hearing for the last other stats here, millennials. 42% of millennials unfamiliar with Mao Zedong.
Yeah.
That's
shocking.
Famous founder of the People's Republic of China, revolutionary, responsible for, kids out there if you're listening, between 49 or 78 million deaths in China.
Yes.
It's called the Great Leap Forward.
Right.
He was going to drag the agrarian China into the modern times and was cool with killing a cool 50 million people in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Literally the greatest mass murderer in world history. People think it's Hitler. Hitler was horrific.
Right.
This guy killed multiples of what Hitler killed. 42% unfamiliar. And yet what we're doing is, I don't know, in our schools, the globalism and everything, it's like we're racing to teach everyone Mandarin Chinese as if everything of that background is...
Or that there is no right or wrong.
Of course.
And so then when we meld with a society like that, that has those kinds of views, what do we expect to have happen in our future?
Seduction by the views that look nice now because, and frankly, what has their ideological system done? They've kept their political system closed in China, but they've liberalized their economy.
Mm-hmm.
So they have brought more wealth and opportunity, but enriches the elites. And I mean,
I was just going to say, only for the few.
Exactly.
At the top, which is very interesting because technically communism was supposedly started to bring balance to everyone. But in all reality, you end up with even fewer at the top than you do in a capitalistic economy.
Of course.
By far.
Oh, you mean it doesn't work?
Right.
Oh.
It does not work. I guess that's a long way of saying it does not work.
Breaking news. Yes. No, I mean, 40% didn't know who Che Guevara was. 33% don't know who Vladimir Lenin is. I mean, it's just you add it all together. And it's this astonishing lack of knowledge about history. Mm-hmm. And when you don't know history, as you're doomed to repeat it, and you're seduced by ideas that look very familiar. It's funny. It's not just a young and old. It's a foreign and domestic thing, too. You talk about people that talk with people who have lived in Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
They understand communism because they still live under the specter on it. Americans are like, oh, but communism, no big deal. They still see it and realize it can be a threat.
Right,
there's
a
great quote that you wanted to mention.
I did. I wanted to remind our listeners a quote that Ronald Reagan said, and that is that freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. If the solemn obligation of this generation is to educate the rising generation about the manifold victims and crimes of the deadliest isms of the last 100 years, and that is communism. So what he is saying is that we need to make sure that our people know what communism is, what it has done, the responsibility it has for the deaths that we see in this era.
Yep.
And at Liberty, that's what we're doing. And we're going to interview John, and we're going to talk a little bit about how we do that and
that's
why
you
it's
need
different.
To stick around, because John is not just a history teacher. He's a freedom fighter.
Yep.
If you think about it, that's exactly what it is. And Liberty's not just a school. It's a mission. I mean, if countries rise and succeed based on their ideas and ideals, then this all matters that much.
Yep.
You got me all fired up on Saturday.
Good. I know. You're excited. I like that.
I love it. All right. This has been fun. It's going to be a lot of fun to talk to John. We will be right back on Education Nation.
Are you looking to hire more staff, but you're too busy to run through the process? Are you exhausted from paging through hundreds of unqualified resumes to find one employee that has the skills you require? Maybe you want to create a more positive work environment by eliminating underperforming employees. Or perhaps you're looking to be hired, but can't find the right fit. Let JP Staffing simplify your search, saving you both time and frustration. JP Staffing is a full-service boutique staffing business specializing in accounting and finance, human resources, and office administration on temporary, temporary-to-hire, or direct-hire basis. If you have hiring needs, the team at JP Staffing will provide honest feedback concerning your job descriptions, salary, benefit packages, and company culture. If you're looking for a job, JP Staffing professionals will work with business contacts across the Twin Cities to find the best position for you. JP Staffing has successfully placed candidates all across the metropolitan area and western Wisconsin. Acting as a constant resource for its clients, JP Staffing.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Welcome back to Education Nation on this Saturday morning. My mind, Rebecca, is still blown by the article we just read in the first segment.
I know.
Those statistics, I mean, the facts, what kids are learning. It's scary.
It is scary.
It is flat out scary.
Yeah.
And so we kept that part kind of short because we went through a lot of the facts because we wanted to get to the bulk of our show today, which is an interview with one of your good friends.
Yes.
And mine.
Yes, of course. And actually, that person that we're about to introduce is the one who made me aware of this article in the first place.
Well done, sir.
And that is one of our fine teachers, John Valla. He is our high school history teacher. He teaches all of the high school history courses. And he's awesome at basketball coaching and at teaching.
Are you a basketball coach,
kind of
too?
All
I am.
Sorts of things at Liberty.
Wow.
Yeah,
buried the lead on that one.
Trip.
I do, too.
You know, absolutely. He's a jack of all trades, right? He can do it all.
So, no, if you're at Liberty Classical Academy and you're learning history in grades 9 through 12, you're learning it from John.
That's
absolutely.
Right.
You are. Yes,
and
you are.
How long have you been there?
5 years.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So John made me aware of that article last week, and I was just appalled when I saw it. And we really wanted to bring you on today, John, because we wanted you to talk to our listeners about, well, obviously, A, what's appalling about that, those statistics, but B, how we do things differently at Liberty and why we think it's important that our students do learn history and how they learn it and all of that. So maybe you could start by giving a little background on how we do teach history at Liberty, and then we can tie it into the socialism, communism discussion that
sure.
we...
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, at Liberty, we do history... pretty differently, I would say, compared to most schools.
Right.
We do history in terms of breaking it down by four segments. So we look at ancient, medieval, early modern, Renaissance history, and then modern history.
Mm-hmm.
And so each kid, as they go through our school, is going to go through that that pattern three times, actually, K through 12.
Right.
So they're going to be exposed to history, the whole course of Western civilization three times. So hopefully by the time they graduate, they have a very in-depth knowledge of the origins of our culture, of our society.
And we were talking about this before the show. I mean, you do that three iterations over, my first grader is going to hear it for the third time when he's in, you know, 11th grade or 10th grade and into 12th.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you must be having deep conversations by the time you get to K, you know, 9 through 12.
Oh, absolutely. It's a lot of fun for me as a teacher. Mm-hmm. I got to do a lot of really fun things and looking at some pretty in-depth primary sources that we read, especially in high school. You know, today we're going to be talking about communism. 12th grade, we read Marx's Communist Manifesto, which I forgot to bring with me today. But I
carry it around with you all the time.
Carry it around with me all the time, absolutely.
You're the coolest guy at the party.
So, yeah, it's a lot of fun, and the kids respond to it. I mean, I think kids, they want to be challenged, and we definitely challenge them in what we read.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we'll talk more about that as well, but I got to get your reaction to this article. I mean, just overall, you read this article, your thoughts.
Well, I'd like to say that I'm surprised, but I'm really not. I think this survey really corresponds to a lot of the data we've been getting for the last 10, 15 years, other surveys that have been done, which really show that American students are becoming more and more historically illiterate.
Mm-hmm.
We see that, I think, because of a lot of reasons, but a few that I really think are important. One of the things that I see People that are actually going to school to become teachers, especially history teachers, are not really required to oftentimes even take very many history classes. Mm-hmm. I know when I was in school, if I wouldn't have minored in history, I would have only had to have taken two or three history courses my entire 4 years to graduate. So how do we expect our students to actually be historically literate if our teachers aren't?
Why is that? Is it because they're focusing more on educational, you're taught to be a teacher as opposed to be an expert on a subject?
That's part of it. But part of it, too, is, you know, there's an emphasis on social studies. And that is a lot of different things, a lot of which oftentimes doesn't even really get taught in high school. I know I took like an anthropology class, which is great, but I'm not teaching that in high school. So there's a lot that our teachers aren't getting in terms of the content knowledge that they need to really be effective in the classroom. Mm-hmm. I would also say, if you're looking at schools and their curriculum too, history is more and more being downplayed as important. Especially in high school. You know, in Minnesota, kids are required to take 3.5 to 4 credits of social studies, but really only 2 history classes. And if you look at the curriculum in those classes, it's a mile wide and an inch deep in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting a lot, but you're not really getting much in depth.
Mm-hmm. And aren't we now getting the question, whose history? You know what I mean?
So
the whole Howard's Inn, people's history,
yeah,
you know, why
definitely.
Are we studying this when we should be studying the struggles of this or that? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's infected the classroom, mm-hmm. obviously, a great deal.
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and that's part of the problem. I think a lot of history classrooms, it revolves around a textbook. And textbooks are great tools, but oftentimes they're shaded with a certain ideological bent, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to really teach our kids skills, critical thinking skills, to be able to look at history for themselves and not just regurgitate what somebody else is telling them about history.
Thus our emphasis on the primary documents.
Absolutely.
At Liberty. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really the only way to know for sure what was happening at the time, is to actually look at those primary documents.
Yeah, yeah. If kids aren't looking at those primary sources, they're not really getting history, at least how I would think about it.
Right.
They're just telling you a bunch of facts that they've heard.
Because when you're a kid, I remember when my mind was blown, I was reading the newspaper, and my dad said, well, that's not necessarily true, Pete. And I'm like, but it's in the newspaper. It's got to be true, right? When you're a kid reading in junior high or high school, you read your textbook is gospel if you're not thinking outside the box at all. And that does show you how much an agenda can drive.
Oh, definitely.
Not only your textbook, but your teacher.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's the other issue. You know, when you have so many teachers, especially at the college level, and I'm talking more there now than I am at the high school, but I would even argue probably at most of the high schools, that tend to lean more towards the left side of the spectrum in terms of how they want to view history. So in terms of America's founding, there might not be much emphasis at all on the fact that many of these people were religious people who, you know, when they talk about separation of church and state, they were much more concerned about developing a Church of England than they were trying to keep church or religion out of the marketplace or out of the square. So
massive consequences that little nuance, which is not little at all, actually has.
Right. It has wreaked havoc. Well, I would say havoc in some sense, from my perspective, in our culture today, because there is just this incessant desire to try to wipe religion out of everything in the name of separation of church and state,
sure.
when that's not what it was intended for.
Well, John, I mean, one of the examples that blew our mind in the first segment was, you know, the number of people killed by communism and Stalin and others. How do you teach that? So you got a course, you know, you've got this ideology in communism, you've got world leaders that have tried to implement it. What does that look like in the classroom?
Well, for me, it really starts with having kids look at some of the philosophical assumptions of what communism kind of takes for granted. And we, in order to do that, we actually do, as I said a little bit earlier, we read the Communist Manifesto. So it's only through doing that that we allow kids to really start thinking through, you know, does this system really work in practice? And so they're forced to really grapple with some of these tenets of communism that sound sometimes pretty good in theory.
Of course.
But when you actually put them in the real world, they have catastrophic results.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Well, and there's so little understanding of human nature. And that was, I know that we don't want to go off on your book right now, Pete, but that was one of the things that really impressed me about your book, is that you had a real understanding of human nature, and you shared that in the book. And you know, the fact that people are born in need of sin versus being, or in need of, people being born
in need of grace,
in grade of grace and you know, versus thinking that people are born, you know, perfectible. And, yeah. you know, I think that communism and socialism are very much built on this idea that we can be perfectible.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, communism, right, it says, essentially, right, to each or from each according to their ability, to each according to their need. And that sounds great. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a system that a lot of people would like. It sounds fair. But when you actually apply that in the real world, it doesn't work so well. Mm-hmm. Human beings are not perfectible. Mm-hmm. Human beings, you know, if I'm a producer and I see somebody not doing their fair share right. of the work, and I'm doing all the work, I'm not going to work very much longer.
Right.
And
yeah.
people are going to give up.
Right.
And that's what we see in communist and socialist countries throughout the world and throughout history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you do. Mm-hmm. But you have it, so much of it does feel and sound like it could be good and could be right without the right refined and training. I mean, you talk about, we all want to believe, you want to believe in the other, that there's inherent goodness there. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a reflex I've had. Like, mm-hmm. hey, we're all capable right. of such great good, but we're all capable of such great evil mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. And without that understanding, you do just lunge for utopia mm-hmm. in each generation. And we're seeing it now. We talked about it in the first segment. I mean, there's a reason why Bernie Sanders resonates with people.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that he's selling them something that sounds great to their ears, which have never been attuned to the counter argument. And that's, how about socialism? You guys talk about socialism and its manifestation too, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we really, throughout history, I try to show kids that there is a difference between big government systems like socialism and small government systems. And when you look at the empirical evidence throughout history, you see repeatedly in societies that adopt a small government approach that allows the free market to work, you see prosperity. And in places where you get the opposite, where you get socialism, communism, big government liberalism, you get societies that oftentimes are becoming a lot less
productive.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing it right now. We see it in mm-hmm. Venezuela.
I was just going to bring that up.
I just saw a story right before mm-hmm. I came over here where they're mm-hmm. literally weighing their currency as they're going in to buy a loaf of bread because it's mm-hmm. worthless. Mm-hmm. And that's the result of socialism. It's crazy.
Well, and then what happens is you end up with all kinds of crime because people are desperate. And, you know, I mean, it's just a vicious cycle. And it's really sad.
Yeah. Yes. Because, know? Listen, you can sound... People will point at you in modern day society and say, you look like a conspiracy theorist. You know, you may not be a prepper now, but, you know, you're going to be, all of these things. But the thin line between civility and mm-hmm. society and breakdown is very thin.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just wait till the electricity goes out.
Yep.
And it goes out for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 yeah. days. Then we find out where your real core is. Mm-hmm. And in history, states have found that out because states fail. And then human nature descends,
right.
and you see what happens.
That's the importance of history. So
yes!
here we are with
Rebecca,
a bunch
as she
of millennials.
Always does, gets it back on the track.
Here we have all these millennials who think that George W. Bush actually is more responsible, or is responsible for more deaths than Stalin.
My gosh.
Or Hitler. Now, I believe that the accurate fact is that Stalin is responsible for, I've heard, anywhere from 20 to 60 million deaths, depending on
right.
how you count them.
Yeah.
And whether you count the famines yep. as being planned famines or, you know, perchance famines or what
right.
have you.
Right.
okay. Perchance.
A planned famine.
It is. Seriously. I yeah. mean, this is, when you read about it, that's, you know, I mean, there are many who would say, yes, it was. It was, that's exactly what he was doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you look at it, I mean, statistically, if you were to combine all the deaths from World War I and all the deaths from World War II, that's about how many people have been killed by communism, whether we're yeah. talking about, you know, murder or famine, whatever.
Right.
Throughout the 20th century. That's a staggering amount of people and a horrible evil. And yet people think George W. Bush was worse than
the
that.
The Iraq War. Right. No, it also
who didn't even purposefully kill anybody the way
right.
those leaders did.
It's so absurd I can't even talk about
yeah.
it. Because
yeah.
But what is it about that the way we look at these things that what it does to our discourse is it forces us to get hyperactive about everything now, thinking it's special or big or the biggest or the most amazing, when in actuality, it's a blip in history.
Yeah. We have recency bias. We really do. We think that everything that's happening now.
There's a phrase for it. It's called recency bias.
Yeah, everything that happens now is the most important thing.
So true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
and that's, again, because we're not taught our history.
Yep.
It goes back to that every time. We just want to focus on, we kind of think we're the center of the world here, this generation.
Well, doesn't that feed the narrative? I mean, we're not here to just millennial bash, but doesn't that feed, it does feed the narrative of me, I'm the center, I'm the most important, this is the newest and the shiniest and the toughest and the most difficult. It's like, no, actually not.
Right.
Or our politics are so divisive, the worst ever. No, we had duels back in the day. You know what I mean?
We don't have those anymore.
No. Unbelievable. We only have a quick second here, but I want to talk about America's founding. Have you run into, you know, there's so much revisionism on that too. Mm-hmm. How do you teach that in light of the fact that, hey, our founders were slave owners. There were sins of the past that we don't like today. How do you deal with those?
Well, yeah, I mean, we want to be honest about history. We don't want to hide things from kids. And I think, it goes back to really trying to teach our kids some critical thinking skills and having them look at the primary sources. And if they do that, you know, I really truly believe they're going to come to an informed conclusion and decision about how to think about our founding and the importance of a lot of the principles that we enjoy from our founding fathers.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point.
Helping them understand the difference between throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Right.
I mean, it's one thing to recognize that there are some really ugly pieces of the founding of America, but that doesn't mean that the principles weren't valuable and worth upholding and trying to uphold today.
Yeah, human beings aren't perfect. They never will be.
Right.
But we're going to do our best to live up to those principles that we've been handed down, that have been handed down to us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, if you're listening this morning and you want your kid to learn real history, you should send him to Liberty Classical Academy and let him sit in John's class.
Absolutely. There you go.
Seriously, this is it's amazing. It's motivating. I really appreciate guys and gals that are out there teaching and engaging with ideas that matter in our world today. Not enough people do. That's why I love Liberty, and I appreciate what you do in the history classroom
every
day.
Yeah, thanks for being with us today,
John. Thanks for joining us.
Sure appreciate it.
All right, we will be right back to wrap up the show.
Are you looking to build or remodel your home? If you can dream it, Hagstrom Builder can do it. Whether it's new construction, renovation, or remodel, Hagstrom Builder will craft an architectural design to reflect your lifestyle and taste. Hagstrom Builder specializes in working with landscape and light to bring the beauty of your surroundings in. From Minnetonka to the St. Croix Valley and everything in between, Hagstrom Builder is available to make your dream home come true. For more information, visit HagstromBuilder.com. Hagstrom Builder, no shortcuts, ever.
We don't need no education. We don't need no control. Welcome back to Education Nation, where we just had a wonderful conversation with John Valla, history teacher at Liberty Classical Academy. Heard a little bit about how that how socialism and communism and history in general get taught at Liberty. What a great opportunity for him to be able to share with our listeners. And really, it really shows the incredible dichotomy between what it can be, you know, what we're doing at Liberty, and what sadly is happening in the vast majority of our schools today.
There's a dichotomy and then there's a chasm. And I think that is the difference between what we're seeing. I mean, two quick things. I mentioned, you know, Mandarin Chinese. There's nothing wrong with learning other languages and other cultures.
There's a good
That's
thing.
Exactly what Liberty does too.
Right.
But when you do that without reinforcing the values of our country and Western civilization, the things that, then you're doing this generation an absolute terrible disservice, which is why I love the fact that primary documents are read from all ideological perspectives, giving it a fair shake. And then I was also pointed out in the break that Bernie Sanders, King Socialist here, who almost was the Democratic nominee,
the supposed pauper,
after he got out, turned out he had some cash and he wanted to use the capitalistic system to buy a $575,000 house on a lake
on Lake
the border
Champlain.
Between New York and Vermont.
Yeah.
So it turns out socialism is good business.
I was going to say, capitalism kind of works pretty well after all, huh? Even for a socialist.
It does. So, no, it's a fun show. Fun, but sobering and sad show. Because it's fun. I get fired up, and I fired up about what Liberty does and how well you do it. But it is, it's really sad.
It is
incredibly
sad.
Republic.
Yes, it is. And we part of the reason we do this show, Pete, is to wake up the nation, wake up our listeners as to what is really happening in our schools today. A lack of history to the point where we don't even understand what Lenin and Stalin did today.
Yep.
Two of the biggest figures in recent history.
Mao who? Mass killer who?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you're listening right now and your kids don't know those names, go talk to them about those names.
Make sure
go
you
talk
do.
To them about communism. It's the questions we always ask about school as well. So,
and then make sure you join us next week.
Yes.
On Education Nation.
10:30 on Saturdays. We love having you. Thanks, Rebecca.
Yeah, thank you.